Thanks, John. Hi, everyone. I'm Stephen Downs, and I'd like to begin this very early Monday morning by bringing you all greetings from the people of Canada. It's a pleasure to be here. It doesn't even feel cold to me. It feels mostly early. And what you're about to discover is that I am not a Monday morning speaker, but that's okay. The title of my talk is From EduBlogs to the Collective Consciousness, and I'm well aware that it takes a certain amount of audacity to put a phrase like collective consciousness in the title of my talk, but I went ahead and did it anyways, because my background is in philosophy, and so I figured I could get away with it. And what I'm going to do today, I'm going to begin talking about some things that may seem fairly familiar to you, and I'm sort of going to move slowly through these things, and I'm going to try to draw a picture, and I'm actually going to move from blogs, which I think is probably a pretty common starting point for everyone, to a new picture of learning that is beginning to merge across the web. And it's sort of funny because I was thinking about this this morning, and you know, this talk is like kind of one of those epics, right? You know, like Lawrence of Arabia or whatever, the grand sweep of history, you know, going from blogs to e-learning 2.0 to aggregation to mashups to all of that sort of stuff. This huge sweeping epic, and I thought about the historical scale of that, and it's like it started, well, not last week, but maybe a couple of years ago. So this like this two-year-long epic, and I was reflecting that I've been a little bit, you know, on the road and things like that recently. So I've been out of touch for a couple of weeks. So I'll apologize now because I'm lagging behind the field, but I'll catch up when I get home. Let me begin with where you're probably at. I mean, and you're in the school system, and I was wandering around here looking at the vendors. One of the things they didn't tell me, the other thing they didn't tell me is that I'd be giving an 8:30 a.m. talk. Discovered that when I got here. The weather wasn't a shock, but the other thing they didn't tell me is that I'd be giving my talk in a room, well, I knew it would be a room, but surrounded by all of these vendors. So this is kind of interesting for me. So I hope the vendors are listening. If not, somebody make them. A traditional online learning, traditional learning, this is something you're very familiar with. Tell me if this isn't true of your school. And you should feel free to tell me anything during my talk. I don't mind being interrupted at all, well, except by that guy. But it's institution-based, right? And your software and your learning management systems and your sign-ons and all of that are based at your institution. This is really especially the case in the university system. And in the school systems, sometimes it's more at the board level or even the state level. And it's closed, right? You have, you know, it's almost like a restricted area for your students. It is, as we see in this room, with the small exception of the Linux booth over there, it's very product-based. It's based on content packages. I've done a lot of work in the field of learning objects, and I don't regret that work, although sometimes I denounce it. In the field of learning objects, and the whole concept has sort of morphed into something like we're going to have this nice prepackaged content, and you know, we'll order this content, slap it on some CD-ROMs, stuff it into our institutional repository, and we'll have all of this stuff that will replace books for students. And you know, if you listen to some of the vendors, replace teachers, principals, and the janitor. And learning, especially the new e-learning that we've seen develop over the last 10 years ago, is almost relentlessly content-based. And yeah, I was there when people were saying content is king, and I never actually uttered that phrase, thankfully, but I believed it too, and there was a good reason to believe it, because content's on the internet, on the web 1.0, was king. and it still is king in learning today. And when we talk about online learning, a lot of the talk is about content. That's changing. And that's the saga that I want to talk about that's begun to emerge over the last couple of years. And, you know, I'm credited with coining the term e-learning 2.0, and in fact I did do that. It was an accident. I didn't mean to do that. It just kind of happened. It slipped out. And as I sat down one afternoon and wrote an article, and I needed a title, and there it was, and now I'm stuck with it. That's already begun to be denounced as well. I was about to put out the paper, and 10 minutes later, Jay Cross comes out with an article, e-learning 2 is dead. It wasn't even cold yet. And what, but I prefer to put this kind of talk under the heading of learning networks, because I think the title learning networks more accurately reflects where we're moving slowly in the field of online learning. And as you can see from the slides there, learning networks are not based on institutions. Rather, they're based on networks that, I was going to say transgress, but that's not the word I mean. Well, there's another word that starts with a T. Transcend, that's it. Transcend institutions. Told you, it's like 8:30 Monday morning. With open networks and resources and interactions taking place among and between and around institutions, and very often outside institutions. It's not, and I'm sorry, vendors, not product-based. It's not based on pre-packaged, pre-processed, flaked-informed content that you deliver like spam on a plate to your students. It's based on something very different. It's not even based on the content itself at all. It's e-learning thought of as, rather than the consumption of learning materials, an engagement with those materials, an interaction with those materials, with the people who wrote them and with strangers who live halfway across the world. And where the focus is not on the content is just sort of the stuff that you fling around the network, but the focus in e-learning development and service provision is on, well, services, interaction, conversation, that sort of thing. I always sort of feel badly when I give a talk like this, because this is exactly the opposite of what I mean. What I'm doing now, this isn't really what I mean, but I'll try to do a little bit of what I mean as I'm doing what I'm not meaning. Never mind. So I'm going to begin with blogs. And I assume you're all familiar with blogs. Let's do a little interactivity anyways. Those of you who are familiar with blogs, raise your hands, please. Yeah, the whole room. That's not new anymore. How many of you have a blog? Okay, the rest of you, why not? Isn't that funny? Like, four or five people have a blog. At least four or five people have a blog. You're familiar with blogs, so you've seen blogs before, and I'm just going to pop into Blogger here briefly. See, this is a high-speed connection. There we go. I'm just hoping there's nothing bad on my web pages. You never know sometimes. It's a different world out there, I'll tell you. And while I'm waiting for that to load. Now, the reason why I'm opening up Blogger here, and you've all seen Blogger or seen something very similar to Blogger, is I want to emphasize how easy this is. And this is why it's transforming. It's not that people can create web pages that have dated entries and they look like diaries or whatever. Boy, this is slow. Whoever's uploading pictures or listening to opera, please stop. Okay. And how easy is it? Well, I'm just going to create an entry. Hello. Yeah, I'm cheating a bit. Always end with a flourish. Okay, and now I've just posted a blog entry. Now, I've done nothing magical, right? I've done nothing that you haven't seen before, but what I want to stress to you is that this is something that five-year-old kids can do. And in fact, this is something that is being done mostly by, well, not five-year-old kids, but by kids, by your students. And the reason why they're doing it is because what used to be a difficult thing, creating a web page, writing up your HTML, opening up your FTP, uploading the thing, making sure all your pages are done. Here's my new post. All of that. All that used to be hard. Now it's ridiculously simple. All right. I always forget. This is Microsoft's back there. So. Software is so weird, right? I have PowerPoint. I want to use my Alt tab to get to PowerPoint, and I want the slideshow, right? Not the. So you figure, okay, which one will be the slide? Will it be the big box, right? With the big picture? No, that's exactly the opposite. If you want the nice big one, you pick the little tiny one. It's like they don't run usability tests. Sorry, Microsoft people, but there you go. Actually, I'm not sorry. A lot of students have taken to a site called LiveJournal. And the reason why they like LiveJournal rather than something like Blogger is because LiveJournal, in addition to providing you with, again, the very simple capacity to create your blogs, it also allows you to create a network of friends. Here I'm just picking, I'm living dangerously here, right? I selected random LiveJournal blog. So, you never know, maybe I shouldn't do that. But the idea in LiveJournal is you have your blog, but you also have your network of friends. And when you create your blog post, you can make your blog post publicly. And as you can see, this post here is public. But you can also create blog posts that are private and for your friends only. And so it's kind of interesting. If you are out there looking at blogs and trying to find out what blogs your students are creating, what you are looking at are the things that they actually want the public to see, which is really kind of scary when you think about it. And again, the main point I want to emphasize here is how simple this is. Now, educational blogging, blogging in the service of education, has taken off, I'd say over the last year, 2 years, and we're beginning to see a lot more work being done in that area. And if you access these slides will be on my website later on tonight, and you follow this link, you'll get to an article about the use of blogging in education. And since you've all heard of blogs, or almost all of you have heard of blogs, you probably thought about some of the uses to which these blogs can be put. And I run through some of them in that article, from the use by teachers to post class announcements and things like that, to beginning to use it almost as a research tool. So the teacher, if they're a history teacher, they can start putting up links and resources to the Roman Empire, or I don't know, the fall of the Roman Empire or whatever. It's hard to come up with examples this early. To beginning to use the blog as something that the student can use. And a lot of teachers, a lot of classes have had students create their own blogs and begin using them as their own journal, begin using them to write assignments and things like that. You go right ahead. I was going to start today by saying, don't turn off your cell phones. And the reason why I was going to say that is because, you know, I mean, if the phone call is more interesting, that's cool. I'm okay with it. And so if you're reading your email, that's cool too. And is there anyone blogging this talk? All right. So, and you go right on blogging. That's the way it's supposed to work. So, but the thing is, when you look at and I've done this. I've looked at these student blogs a lot. I sit there on LiveJournal. I hit random blog after random blog after random blog. I work for the National Research Council. I get to do that and call it work. And there's an article that just came out last week by a guy called Dana Boyd. And he's talking about MySpace, which I'll talk a little bit about a little bit later on, but he makes a good point, and I think that this is an accurate and a correct point, that people, especially younger people, are using their online presence as a way of establishing their own identity. And now, of course, it's kind of, I don't want to say superficial, but it's kind of a projection of an identity, right? It's a face or a picture of themselves that they want the world to see. They want people to see them as such and such. And that creates a bit of tension in the use of blogs in learning. And the reason why it creates a bit of tension in the use of blogs in learning is because, well, you know how it is in the schools. We decide we want to use a technology, and we go to the students and we say, you will use this technology. And we say, you will write such and such, or you will use your blog to answer your assignments, or something like that. And it creates this pull between the creation of their own identity and the blog is a place where they have to go and do schoolwork. And so as a consequence, you need to be kind of careful about how you relate with students and student blogs if you are using blogs in learning. But I think the main point, from my perspective, that the main use of blogs in learning is not the writing of blogs. And that might sound kind of odd. No, my view is that the main use of blogs in learning is the reading of blogs. And the reason why I say that is because in the reading of blogs, that's where the communication begins to take place. If you have a blogging engine and you send the student to it and they have this blank, it's very easy to use, but it's this blank screen and you tell them write something, well, they don't have anything to write about. It's like if somebody sent you into an empty room and said, be profound now. And you sort of say, okay, I'll try. I think therefore I am. No, that's been done. You know, you need something to react to. And, you know, it's not totally reacting. It's not always reacting. There's always a creation that comes up. But creation doesn't just sort of spontaneously combust in your head one day, ooh, now I'm a genius. It doesn't work that way. You need to work with things. You need that interaction and communication. And so the reading is what brings this out. And it doesn't matter what they read. As long as they're looking at what other people are writing and following the things that they're interested in. And eventually they will be moved to write. Or maybe not. I mean, writing is not for everyone. Some people like to draw pictures. Other people like to fix cars. I mean, that's okay too. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the creative expression is. But the point is, when they are in this network, getting content, getting opinions, ideas, etc., from people who are similar to them or around the world, that's when the learning actually starts, and that's where the creative process actually starts. And if you look on the blogosphere, you go to LiveJournal and look at random blogs, you'll see this. These posts never occur in isolation. They're always responding and feeding back and commenting back and forth. Now, what's happened in the last year is we've moved from this really easy creation of blogging content, of, for the most part, textual content, to really easy creation of multimedia. Here's a website. How many of you are familiar with this? The blank screen. If you're a Windows user, actually, I guess you're Mac users, aren't you? This is Flickr. And what Flickr is a site where you can store your photos. Let me ask, how many of you are familiar with Flickr?
Oh, right. You see,
this is the way this talk's supposed to work, right? You start off, right, everybody raises their hands, and then there's fewer and fewer hands, and then there's nobody, and then you're being obscure. Yeah, okay. And the idea of Flickr is that you take a photograph, and you upload your photograph, and it's going to be on here somewhere. La-dee-da-dee-da, la-dee-da-dee-da. See, I have to be really careful because I got all kinds of stuff on this machine, most of which I don't want you to see. Yeah, you didn't hear that. That's probably this one. And again, what I'm trying to show you here, let's see, Anchorage, Downs, because that's me, speech, anything else? Somebody give me a tag, anything. Pardon?
A-S-T-I?
See, just, I got it wrong, I can't believe it. Alright, so we have this high-speed connection, so this will go real fast. Now, again, notice how easy that is. Anybody can do this. Like, 10-year-olds are doing this. 15-year-olds are doing this. And what is happening here with a site like Flickr is that people are now able to very easily and very quickly create not simply their own web pages, but their own multimedia. And if we come back, we'll just let that do its thing there for a little bit, and little one, that's right. What we're seeing now is that not just photographs, but all manner of multimedia are being created very simply and very easily. How many of you are familiar with podcasting? More. Yeah, podcasting's gotten a lot of press recently. We're creating a podcast right now. You didn't know this, maybe. Here it is being created. This is a nice little tool called Audacity. No, it's not made by Microsoft. It's in fact an open source product. You can get it for free. And it's just sitting here recording this talk as I go along. And this thing here that looks like a Martian is also recording. I don't know what it's doing, but yeah, it's flashing and beeping, so it's good. And again, the creation of these is very simple now. I just record this. I'll save it as an MP3. I'll upload it to my website. And I'll link to it. And lo and behold, I'm podcasting. But more importantly, from the perspective, because you're all from thinking of this from the perspective of learning and education, what I'm doing right now as I speak, in the act of speaking, is creating an online learning resource. And I'm doing it directly and simply without even thinking about it, just as part of my everyday activity. And this is the world that your students live in now. This is that world where their everyday activities are, in fact, to a large degree, the creation of text, the creation of photos, the creation of audio, of video. If I had a better computer, I don't, but if I did, I'd have the video set up here and I'd record myself while I was talking and then record myself doing the recording. And I love recursion. And we're seeing this being used a lot. Now, if you don't like... Now, is this going to open a new window or the same old window? I'm not sure I want to risk that. I'll risk it. All right, new window. If what I just described sounds too complicated, because after all, you have to record your thing and upload it, that's kind of, it's a pain, right? You can go to a site like Odeo, and all you have to do to record audio is you click on that record audio link, and then speak into your microphone and you're recording audio. And then all you have to do to share it with people is maybe tag it and click a button and you're sharing it with people and you're podcasting it. And it's available for everyone in the world. And how much technical knowledge do you need in order to do this? Well, that would be none. And I cannot underestimate the power of this. Think back way back, like prehistory, before our saga begins, and how hard it was to do all of these things. So here we go. Here's my picture. So, Downstock. Anchorage. What I hate is when I misspell my own name when I do this. Looking. And there you all are. Wave for the camera. Okay, I'm just stating that. Now what I've done is the picture, you saw me taking the picture a little bit earlier. Now I've uploaded it to Flickr, and there it is. Not the world's greatest picture, but I'm not the world's greatest photographer. But it doesn't matter, right? This picture is now available to everyone in the world, and indeed, probably, as this talk is being given, some people will start looking at it. Well, that's kind of neat. I think just 10 years ago, this was impossible. And if you wanted to take and produce a picture and make it available to the entire world, you'd have to contact a publisher like Thompson or Pearson or whatever, or you'd have to contact, oh, I don't know, AT&T or television broadcaster or something like that. You'd have to have, millions of dollars worth of equipment, so advertising budget, salespeople, and even then, because it's so expensive to produce all of this stuff, your picture wouldn't be accessible to most of the people in the world because they couldn't afford it. Now, you just post it on the web, and there it is. Again, there's a lot of work being done today in podcasting online. Here's a site called EdTech Talk. It's run by a Canadian from Prince Edward Island and a couple of Americans. And if I had actually planned ahead, I would have contacted these people because what they do is they record live, so they're broadcasting the conversation live, and then they also record it and put it online. Cannot locate internet server. Don't say that. Well, I guess they're not on right now. Anyhow, I guess we're not going to see them. Another one is EdTech Posse. EdTech Posse is pretty cool. And what they do, they're four people in Saskatchewan, and they have an iRiver. Looks like this, isn't this. This is a Creative Zen, which I like, but I was going to listen to some music while I was giving the talk, but I thought, maybe not. And they take the iRiver. They use the iRiver because it has a microphone jack. So they take a microphone, a lot like this one, and they plug the microphone into the iRiver, put the iRiver down on the table in front of them, and then they have a conversation. And they just ignore it. And then when it's done, they unplug the iRiver, take the file in the iRiver, upload it, and lo and behold, it's a podcast. And you get some... It's a different kind of broadcasting. Like, it's not like public radio, or it's certainly not like CNN, but it's very interesting and very engaging. Well, I say that because I was in some of those conversations. Again, when you think about... Oops, I'm back there. I don't want to be there. I want to be just the little one, which is big. Thinking about the use of podcasting, audio broadcasting on the internet, a good example is Bob Sprankle. And Bob Sprankle doesn't record his own talks or things like that. What he does is he has his classes create audio and upload it to the internet. And so if you go to this site... room 208 is my recollection. You'll find good examples of the uses of podcasting in a classroom setting. He's been doing this for a couple of years now, and he's certainly learned a lot about what to do and, in some cases, what not to do. And so I'm not going to play some of these things, but I could. Okay, let's see how Flickr's doing there. Flickr's good. I'll come back here. So, you have the picture, right? And the picture is a massively distributed publishing network where anybody can easily create their own multimedia content. And where, these days, most of this content is being produced by your students. The next trick is how to get it to people. And that's where something called RSS comes in. And I'm going to ask again. How many of you have heard of RSS? All right. I guess that was, what, maybe a quarter? That's still pretty good. RSS is a content syndication format. And, what is that? It's just me. I always grumble at my computer. And people think I have people in my office when I'm working. I'm talking to my computer and it's complaining back. Here you can see why I was very surprised that they had me do an 8:30 a.m. talk on a Monday. This is an example of an RSS file, and I'm afraid it's a bit small. Maybe I can make that a little bit bigger for you. And even bigger. Bigger. Oops. How's that? It's still not great, but it'll do. And the main thing I want to point out, that didn't help at all, eh? The main thing I want to point out is that RSS is a type of XML. In fact, you've probably heard of XML and semantic web and all of that. RSS is the, by far and away, the most widely used type of XML that there is. There are millions, tens of millions, about 30 or 40 million RSS feeds out there right now. And it's very simple. That's why it's so popular. An RSS feed consists of a channel. Here's the channel for my own newsletter, OL Daily, and a link so you know where to find it, maybe a description and an optional language. And unfortunately, there's no English Canada, so I have to use English US. Story of my life. And then inside a channel, you will have one or more items. And the item consists of a title, a location, and an optional description. Well, that's pretty simple, right? If you had a text editor in front of you, and some of you do, you could probably create one of these pretty simply. And in fact, if you had a text editor and a browser, you could go to this article, just copy this, paste it into your text editor, and you don't even need to worry about the formatting. And that's how RSS can be created. And the idea is it's very easy and very accessible to people. And now it's true that most RSS in the world is produced automatically. Remember we looked at Blogger, right? And any blogging application will automatically produce a file of this type. Blogger produces a variation on RSS called Atom, and it's going to slowly bring it to me. But you'll see it's pretty much the same. Someone's listening to opera again. And I'm going to have to view the source here so that you can see it. But what you'll see is it's almost exactly the same as the other one that I showed you. Now, the names of the tags are different, but basically, in this feed, we have title, link, description, and a couple of other things. And the point that I want to make here is that when I created this blog post, the RSS file was created completely automatically by the system. I didn't even think about it. And so you're saying, okay, well, so you produce some XML out of this, big deal. But, whoops, previous, there we go. What happens now is, because I have the RSS of this content, the RSS is written in XML, which crucially and importantly makes it machine-readable. Which means that you can write a piece of software, and many people have, that will automatically retrieve these files, bring them together, and organize them. Here's the most popular of the bunch. It's a site called BlogLines. BlogLines is a thing that we call an RSS aggregator. And in BlogLines, you subscribe to RSS feeds. If we go, for example, to my own website, you'll find the location of my RSS feed, and this is very typical. Here's the little orange XML button, and you see these little orange XML buttons, or sometimes they say RSS, or sometimes you'll see this little logo here that looks like kind of a radio wave. I don't really like it, but Microsoft has adopted it, so I guess we're stuck with it now. And if you click on that, you will see the RSS file. And this is the RSS file. If you view the source, there's the XML, the channel and the items. And the idea here is, if you take that link, I'll just copy link location here, and then when you're in blog lines, here is blog lines, you can very easily subscribe to it simply by pasting that location in here, where it says subscribe, and then clicking subscribe. Now, if I click subscribe, it'll say I'm already subscribed. Because, of course, the very first feed that I subscribed to in BlogLines was my own. Well, now we're beginning to move into something a little more powerful. Because look at what I've got here in my BlogLines account. EduBloggers. These are people out there in the world who blog about learning, and mostly learning technology, online learning, and things like that, but not exclusively so. And there's several hundred sites here. And altogether, I read about 300 or 400 sites, and I keep up with these every day. And you're thinking, how on earth can you possibly keep up with 300 or 400 sites every day? Actually, for someone in my position, it's fairly conservative, but what BlogLines does is it checks all of those sites for me, it retrieves the RSS feed, it tosses them into the database, and if there's new content from that site, it'll give me something nice and bold like this, and I click on it, and up pops the article, and eventually, and here it is, and now I can read it. And if I want, I can go straight to the source. Now, think about this from a learning point of view. Suppose you were using blogs in your classroom, suppose, and you had 30 students. And you get a site like BlogLines, you subscribe, which is very simple, it'll take you 10 minutes to subscribe to 30 blogs, subscribe to all of those, so that in the morning, you have your coffee, the warm one, pop open BlogLines, and you see instantly and all in one place the content that was created by your students the previous day or evening. And you can zip through that and be done by the time you're finished your toast. And you're caught up with what your students produced the previous night. And more importantly, your students know this. And all of a sudden, this whole idea of putting their assignments on paper and handing them in first thing in the morning, and then you need to find some time during the day to read those things, or maybe during the evening or whatever, and you have to carry them around. All of a sudden, that doesn't make sense anymore. Because now, I've got not just today's assignments, but yesterday's, the day before's. I've got all of the assignments. I can do a search through them, all of that sort of stuff. And so you can begin to see the power of this sort of technology. Or alternatively, suppose you're a history teacher, and one of the subjects that you're teaching is ancient Egypt. And so you find some blogs or similar resources on ancient Egypt, and you subscribe to them in your aggregator, and then every morning you'll get two or three new items on ancient Egypt, and so now you've got something interesting and new that was created yesterday that you can talk to your class about, directly relevant to your own interest and your own subject. This is what RSS and blogs do for you. Now, if you want to see mine, I need to remember what the link was. There we go. I'm pretty sure that's the one. Yeah. If you're taking this down, www.bloglines.com/public/downs. Don't forget the E, otherwise it won't work. And you can read all the feeds that I read. And so if you wonder what I'm reading any given day, you just go there and you take a look at these feeds. And more to the point, you will find all kinds of content, information, resources on our topic in our field by scanning through this list. Even better than me. Never mind. When do you kick me out of here? I'm just wondering how much more time I have. No one knows.
When you're done.
When I'm done. Well, I don't want to go over mine. Another thing that RSS provides is RSS aggregation. Here's a site called Technorati. Technorati, as it says here, and the number changes. Okay, they've basically given me carte blanche here. It says 9:17, he says I can go to 10:30, but you guys don't want me to go to 10:30, and I won't. So I don't think you do, anyways. Anyhow, here's Technorati, because I'd need a break before then. And a beer, even if it is Monday morning. Technorati harvests or aggregates 29 million RSS feeds. Now, think about that for just a second. And one of the things that I do with Technorati is I search for, well, what else? Myself. And so here is what has been posted in, what's it going to be today? The last 4 days, it's been slow, in Technorati. And in fact, it's captured my own blog, and here's the Hello Anchorage post that I just posted. It's been harvested and is now being displayed by Technorati. It's that quick, folks. It takes a little while to load, but... And then some other things, you never know what's going to be here. Golden Swamp, Jilly Salmon, The Learned Man, da-da-da-da-da-da. I can find a... I access Technorati. I usually do it once a day. I access Technorati, and I find out when anybody in the world is writing about what I've written. Well, that's pretty cool. And what's interesting is I find the most interesting resources, because total strangers write about, well, my site sometimes. And of course, you don't have to, as they say, ego surf. Suppose I was interested in whales.
Whales again?
Yeah, I know. It's a theme. So, here's what's been written, well, this is 8 minutes ago, on whales. So suppose I'm interested in whales. I now have 30 million content, potential content authors from whom I can draw, and out of those 30 million, I can find stuff that's been written today on whales. There you go. Fun with beluga whales. Now imagine you're talking about whales to your students. So you have this Technorati feed, you've always got something new. Well, presumably anyway. I guess there'll be some days when there's nothing new about whales, but 30 million people, what are the odds? And that's going to take me to this BBC News segment. Again, blogging usually reacts to something. Blogs posts don't come out in isolation, they're usually a response to something. And beluga blows rings around other whales. Oh, okay, let's not go there. Oh, you want to see it? All right. Connecting. Loading. Hey, is this top-notch entertainment or what? Loading. 35 kilobytes per second, I remember. There we go, now we have some beluga whales. And if I had the speakers plugged in here, you could actually, I can hear it, but you can't really hear it. And it's that easy. And this wasn't here yesterday. And so if you're teaching about whales in your class, you don't know what's going to be there, but you take a look, you see something, great, now you got something to use in your class. But it stays, yeah. Mostly, because most blogging software archives the posts. The posts go back years. My posts go back to like 2000, 2001. And they're there. They're there pretty much forever. Which is why you need to be careful when you're writing your blog. Because, and tell your students to be careful and think about, you know, okay, you're writing this now, you're 14, you can get away with it. But it's still going to be there when you're 24. And there's been some discussion in the blogosphere, you know, and sooner or later there's going to be a candidate for president or something like that who's going to be tripped up by your blog post. You know, look what you posted when you were 13. You are obviously not suitable to be president. It's coming, folks. I tell you. Okay. That's TechnoReady. We don't need TechnoReady anymore. Close tab. There we go. And now, again, I want you to form a mental picture in your mind of what's happening here, because that's the point of this talk. And the mental picture you have right now should be a network of 30 million individual sources, but where all of these sources are connected together, one to the other, not everyone to everyone, because nobody can connect to 30 million things except maybe TechnoReady, but each blog connected to 5, 10, 15, 20 other blogs. And it forms this massive network. And you see, you have that picture, and then think about the way ideas flow through that. Because I post something here, someone links to it and adds something, someone else links to it and adds something. And you can almost picture, can't you, if you think about it, the waves of ideas and thoughts moving through this network. Now that is a very different picture of knowledge and information from the picture that we have now. Remember I started with this slides, right? Traditional learning networks. Traditional learning, you got books on a shelf gathering dust in a library, that's knowledge. This is the classical picture of knowledge. As compared to this network of 30 million or more sources with ideas waving through and reverberating, and you know, there's archives there and all of that, but there's new stuff coming up every day, and learning is, and knowing is being tapped into this network and contributing to this network and bringing things in and reworking them and sending them out. It's a very different picture. And again, I underline and I stress, this is the picture of learning, the picture of knowledge that your students are already in. They're there now. So I've been playing around with this stuff a little bit. And one of the services that came up recently is a service called Superglue. And why Superglue is interesting is what it does is it taps into various RSS feeds. I've showed you a couple of things already. I showed you my Blogger account, and I showed you my Flickr account, and I have various other accounts. And Superglue's just not going to come up. Why won't it come up? I don't know. I'm going to get rid of this anyways. Maybe it'll come up later, maybe it won't. Who knows? Anyhow, what Superglue does is each of these sites, Flickr, Blogger, LiveJournal, etc., they all automatically produce an RSS feed for me. And what Superglue does is it lets me tell Superglue the location of each of these individual feeds. And it brings them together and creates one Uber feed. Well, they don't call it an Uber feed. I think they call it a super feed or whatever. But the idea is, it's called feed splicing, where you take separate feeds and you merge them together into a single feed. Okay, well, Superglue is just not going to show up. Nothing's going to show up. Don't do that to me. Oh, Microsoft people, look what your computer is doing to me. Okay, here's the part where I wing it. Unbelievable. What I've done is, I was kind of inspired by Superglue. This really is unbelievable. Remember the person, the technical person? Yeah, the technical person said, no, use the Ethernet, it's better. This has worked perfectly for me all week. Man. Isn't that wild? It's PowerPoint that appears to have crashed. Figures. Never mind. Well, anyhow, at least Firefox open source product, not made by Microsoft, is still working. What I did is, I thought about this. Now, the problem with super glue is, you have to go in there, you have to create an account, you have to sign up, it's on this hosted site, which, as we just saw, sometimes doesn't work, because it's out there somewhere, and like there are 10 million people using it, so there's quite a bit of a load on it. So I thought, well, I could make one of those, and so I did. But instead of using a hosted site, what I did is I created an XML file in a format called OPML. And here's, oh, is that PowerPoint coming back?
No.
That's, something's happening. Oh, yeah. Life is a mystery. And the computer knows it's Monday morning, too. So I don't know what it's doing there, but never mind. So what you're seeing here is the non-functioning version of the OPML. It actually is still working, it's just Firefox doesn't like it. There it is. Let's hope it holds now. It's another XML file. XML is so useful. And all it is a list of feeds. So create one of these files, and there's my feed for OL Daily, and there's my feed for Flickr. And then what my glue does, and we'll just pop into it here, is it harvests those feeds. And this is a very simple application. You want to see the code for this application? Well, there it is. Okay, it's not quite that simple. There's a little bit on the back end. But the thing is, I now have a very simple application on my own website that aggregates the feeds that I've created from other places. Here's the picture that we took just a few minutes ago. Now it's showing up in my Glue feed. And you thought, okay, that's a cute parlor trick. And pretty much at this point, that's all it is. So I took it one step further. And I have to type all these links now because PowerPoint has died. Now this is a page I call RSS Writer. And following the tradition of, well, everyone these days, I've dropped a significant vowel. And so what this does is it pulls some of these things together. So I'm going to pick now the my glue that I just showed you. Now the my glue is feeding right into this RSS writer page. So this is the output from my glue. Here's the picture that I just took. Whoops, I didn't mean to click on it though. Sorry about that. And I have to do it again. This little application here that you're looking at consists of about 30 or 40 lines of JavaScript and exactly 5 lines of Perl code that I run on my server. Compare that to, say, Microsoft Word. Come on. There we go. So I'll take my picture, I'll drag it into my editing area, and I'll edit some things. I am building a learning resource. It's like those movies, right? You see those movies where people are on the internet, they always read aloud as they type. Who does that? I'm Sandra Bullock. The government is... No. That's right. Give a talk in Anchorage. And let's give this a little title too, so that people know it's a title. Hello. It's Monday morning. It's hard to make up titles. And make that bold. And yeah, that'll do. Now, what was my blog name again? Utonmania. Oops. Okay. Everyone cover your eyes. I am so bad. Oh, I'll be changing that. Don't you love it when you demonstrate like half-finished applications in front of a live audience? All right, now, I want you to think about what I've just done, okay? I have this little application that aggregates RSS feeds, splices them together, and if I want, because MyGlue supports this as well, I can filter them according to topic, regular expression, author, whatever. And it creates this customized feed which feeds into the RSS writer. I just drag and drop from the RSS writer into the WYSIWYG editor. I add and mix my own contents. I can bring in things from multiple sources and then I submit it. And what has happened now is that this has now been posted to Blogger. And there it is. And this is the new picture. I've created this learning resource as I stood here giving a talk. Should be evidence that it's not hard. And the talking is hard. Doing the talking while you're producing the learning resource, that's hard, but that's okay. And what's really important now is, again, this is very simple technology. My script is a little rough around the edges, as you've already seen, but there are people out there now producing good scripts, because they're real programmers, and anyone can have this. Not just you, but your students. And now picture the sort of learning that your students can be doing. Remember we were talking about traditional learning with the content on the shelf and on the CD and all of that? And we got the guys from Pearson and Thompson who are spending millions of dollars producing resources that they will prevent poor people from accessing. Well, instead, we can create learning resources like this, like I've just done, with the camera and the microphone and the text editor, using the knowledge that we have at our disposal, and we throw this into the network and the students pick it up. And instead of consuming it, and trying to dump it into their brain, they rewrite it. They remix it. They add things to it. They make it their own. They put it in their own space, and it enters the network. And it becomes, doesn't it, kind of like a conversation, where the words of that conversation are the blog posts, the photographs, the movies, the animations, and this conversation goes back and forth. And so instead of simply sitting there passively receiving learning, they're engaging in it. Now this doesn't happen automatically, it doesn't happen by magic, but what is happening is they are doing this now in their world outside school. You know, I was talking with John, I was talking with Chick and some other people, and observing that most of the technology here that I'm talking about, the blogs, and I'll talk about social networks and Flickr and all of that, is not available in the schools because it's blocked and it's banned. And, you know, it's kind of funny because this is the stuff that students are using and learning with now, and yet this way of allowing them to actually engage in the conversation with each other and others around the world about topics that interest them is blocked. There's a barrier that has been formed. I find that disturbing and odd. Let's see if PowerPoint has decided to work again. What do you know? Now that's just one side of it. What you've seen there with the writer and that's just the beginning of it. We've got the messaging, ICQ and Skype and all of that, and you probably have seen in the little corner people logging on and logging off on Skype. And if I wanted, I could sit here and I could call someone up. I'm not going to do it, and hopefully nobody will call me while I'm giving this talk. I like to live dangerously. But I can be in instant free audio communication with anyone around the world. Same with ICQ, except ICQ is text only. It's a text messaging service. And I can either have the application running on my computer, or in the case of ICQ, I can go to a website and just use the website as my instant messaging client. And the way both of these work, they don't connect me with every other person in the world. There's a billion people online. I don't need to be connected with a billion people because most of them I don't know. And the ones I do know, not everyone. I just want to be connected with a few. So if we look at Skype, for example, Skype works. You select the list of people that you want to talk to on a reasonably regular basis, and you have your list, and that's your network. So this is my Skype network. And these are the people who can call me up and give me a Skype phone call at any time. And if you look at them, they're all over the world. Jay Cross in California, Darcy in Calgary, Josie in Britain, Rob Wall in Saskatchewan, Timu in Finland. These are people I work with on a regular basis. Not every day, but pretty much. And so I have a network. And my learning consists of these ongoing conversations and blogs and Skype conferences and so on with these people. With the EdTech Talk people, when we recorded that podcast, what they did is they just gave me a Skype phone call. I'm sitting there in my living room in Moncton. I won't tell you what I was wearing. Okay. And I'm just chatting, I have my headphones on and feet up and staring at the ceiling, and I'm just chatting with them. And they're chatting wherever they are, whatever they're doing, and we're broadcasting that live, and there are people listening to that live, and they sometimes pop in and take part of the conversation, or they type messages in the message area, and then all of that is recorded and distributed as a podcast, and of course RSS is used to distribute that podcast, and even before it's done, it's showing up all around the world, and people all around the world are listening to it. That's power. Other types of authoring. Yesterday, I did a seminar, a long seminar, in preparation for this talk. They didn't really know that. Although you could have picked it up, right? The seminar and the talk had the same name. And what I did is, instead of slides or anything like that, because I was feeling jet-lagged, I just tossed a few things onto a wiki. How many of you are familiar with wikis? Okay. And the neat thing about a wiki, and here's our thing. See, there's somebody signing into Skype. He's in North Carolina. So here's my talk. It looks pretty familiar. And the neat thing about a wiki is that any person in the world can come here and edit it. And so here's the editing screen in this wiki. And it's going to be a little slow because somebody's still out there listening to opera. And I'll add a little bit. Anchorage, Alaska. It is the 27th still. And I need to save. All right, save. Anybody can do that. You guys can do it right now. If because we have a wireless network in the room. If you've brought your computer with you, you just type downs.jot.com. That'll take you to this page. Click on the edit button, and if you want to call me names, no one's going to stop you. Because it's a wiki. And you might think, how could that possibly work? And interestingly, it does. And of course, you can immediately begin to think of some of the applications. You know, instead of giving all of your students, you know, assignments to write something on paper, have them write something on a wiki. Have them edit each other's pages. Well, okay, maybe not that. I'm trying to close this tab. Oh, come on, you silly thing. There we go. How could it possibly work? Here is a site, which some of you have probably seen in the news, being criticized most likely, called Wikipedia. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. It is, quite literally, a wiki. And based on what I've just said to you, you should be concluding from that anybody can go in and edit any of the pages. And that pretty much is true. I'm going to pick a random page here. And it's going to take me just a couple of seconds to pop up. Maybe I'll close Skype because I don't want to live that dangerously. La di da di da, and we wait. David Corner. Okay, I've never heard of David Corner, but Romanian Jewish Trotskyist militant. Oh, great. Now I'm going to get angry letters to the editor in the newspaper. And edit this page. Now, this is an online encyclopedia. It is used and referenced by millions of people, including your students, while they're writing their papers. They do their research in Wikipedia, and then they fake the research. Hello, world. This is a bit of random graffiti. It's probably spelled wrong. I've never been able to spell that word. Created in Anchorage. Oh. Anchorage, Alaska. This is the encyclopedia. Imagine doing this to Britannica. I've just saved it. And so, this encyclopedia, which has more than a million articles, has more readers than Encyclopedia Britannica, has been evaluated in studies like the recent study in Nature to be roughly of similar quality to Encyclopedia and doesn't weigh anything like Encyclopedia Britannica, has just allowed me to put in this article on David Corner some random graffiti. How could that possibly work? And yet it does. And the reason why it does is because anybody can contribute to it. And the preponderance of people who contribute to a free worldwide encyclopedia want to put in correct rather than incorrect information. I'm going to leave this article here. We'll come back to it in a little bit. Not too long. Actually, if somebody could sort of keep track of it on your computer and let me know when it's fixed. Oops, right, wrong screen again. Wikis are being used up here in this part of the world. This is one I didn't know about, but I'll point it out to you. And this is... Ouch, it always does that. The Bering Strait School District's Open Content Initiative. The neat thing about a wiki is since anybody can contribute to it, you can use it to create open educational content. In South Africa, they put their entire national curriculum on a wiki. And just everybody who knows anything about that, you know, the content of that curriculum, have been adding to this. And they're creating their own national free educational resource. And that's what's happening up here as well. Is this it? No. Oh, yeah, it is. Sorry. And so, here is a page that you can contribute to, any of you who has a computer and internet access, site-specific information, strategic planning, action teams. You can see how an environment like this can be used by multiple people in order to create resources. And used not just by yourselves, not just by teachers, but by students, by parents, by anybody who's interested, by random people giving talks in different places around the world. Let's see how that wiki page is doing. I'm just reloading the page here. And... la-dee-da-dee-da, it takes a little while to reload. Oh yeah, use the Ethernet. It will be faster. It's a dedicated network. Every time I hear dedicated network, I go, no. Okay, let that reload. People talk about Web 2.0. Here's your classic Web 2.0 application. I'm going to get rid of this one because we don't need it. It's a site called Writely, writely.com. And myself and a few other people are playing with Writely. And what you'll notice about Writely is it looks a lot like a word processor. And in fact, it is a word processor. And normally it loads faster. Let me get rid of that. And we'll come back here. So here's a document that we're editing, and you see all the irregular editing kind of things. And the thing is, I can edit this document, and as I am editing this document, other people who are logged into this document can edit it at the same time. So we can have this document, and this particular one, there are four of us working on it, we can have this document that the four of us are actually writing in the same space at the same time. That's Web 2.0. And it's like the application is right here on the browser. It's like the web has changed from this place where we consume content to this place where we do things like write together on the same document at the same time. Think you could use this in a classroom? It's probably blocked. Am I cynical? Okay. And that popped up into its own window for some reason. Let's see how that Wikipedia page is doing. It's reloaded. No, it's still not corrected. Okay. Let's reload it again. Maybe to reload faster this time. Okay. They have decided to kick me out after all. I think it's when I said the word Trotsky. I'm just kidding. Well, I'll reload in a few minutes. Oops. I want to pop into the briefly because this is where all your students are. It's MySpace. It takes a lot of these concepts and puts them together. People create their own identities on MySpace. They link to each other in networks of friends. They create pages. They upload multimedia, including images and animations and the like. And they have their networks of friends, just like I have on Skype. They have theirs on MySpace. And they are living in this world now. We opened up the MySpace for one of the schools here in Anchorage. In this area, there's 114 people in the school. You have to be over 16 to use MySpace. There are 24 people from that school with a MySpace account. We figure it's pretty much the whole senior class is using MySpace. It's blocked in their school, but it doesn't really seem to slow them down, which raises the question of what is being accomplished by that blockage. Now, take all of this together and think about this now. Because remember I asked you to draw that mental picture earlier with all of these blogs and all of this content all connected? Now take all the authors of this content and connect them too. As a different web of connections, right? People connect differently than content. Right, I'll link to an article in the New York Times. I know nobody on the New York Times, so it's probably just as well. I'll link to people that I know and like. And so now we've got this multi-level web of connections. People connected to people, content connected to content, where because of these connections, personal connections, networks of friends, begin to have semantical importance. Now, what I mean by that is that content moves from place to place across the internet based not only on the nature of the content, but based on the networks of connections between friends and associates, etc., on the internet. And the next thing that's getting added to this, and is just beginning to roll out now, is that as people access this content, the act of this access itself is beginning to produce metadata. And we're seeing that in collective bookmarking, for example, where people create a bookmark and make a comment. Or we're seeing that where people go to Amazon and recommend a book. Or if they go to some blogging services, allow you to do a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the post. There's a site called digg.com where you see that, where people just do a thumbs up and thumbs down and evaluate it. So now we've got this evaluation and people recommending things. And you throw that into the network. And what happens is, if you will, the network organizes itself. It doesn't need to be managed or controlled. People each making their own decisions about who to connect to, what to read, what to write about, what to recommend, create the movement of this content and this knowledge through the network. And we talked about the theory of learning. George Siemens called it connectivism. And the act of knowing, the act of learning, isn't, on this picture, the accumulation of facts in the brain. It's rather the being embedded and connected and knowing how to work and how to talk and how to relate with the other people in this network. And Etienne Wengert called this communities of practice. Thomas Kuhn defined knowledge in this system as knowing how to do the chapters at the back of the, or how to do the problems at the back of the chapter. But the idea is knowing is immersing yourself into a network, into a community. And there are four major principles that I've identified and I've described in a paper called Connective Knowledge that make this work. I'm going to leave you with the question of how many of these are operative at your own schools now. Autonomy. Individuals making their own decisions about what to read, what to write, what to link to. Diversity. The celebration of different cultures, different points of view, different styles of learning, different topics of interest, different ambitions in life. Openness, the free and unfettered and unrestrained exchange of content and information from person to person, place to place. And by free, I mean not merely free as in beer, or although I certainly mean that, but also free as in freedom. You are allowed to send a message to your friend. And interaction, the idea that learning and being part of this network is not sitting there receiving, like watching Gilligan's Island on your television, but participating. Like, for example, finally offing Gilligan, no, never mind. But making the content yourselves. Where you wouldn't watch Gilligan's Island, you would join a team of people and create Gilligan's Island. Except it would be better than Gilligan's Island, because sooner or later, the wisdom of the crowd would have them off the island. Okay, it's early. So, those principles are what make network learning work. And network learning and learning networks are where your students are now and where online learning is going in general in the future. And so, as you go back to your schools, you have this to look at. And, you know, I know things aren't going to change tomorrow. I know they're not going to change this year or this decade. But at every point where you make a decision, what technology to buy or not to buy, and how to set up your networks and what resources to use, ask yourself these questions and ask yourself, am I moving toward learning networks or am I moving away from it? That's the message I wanted to bring to you today. I thank you so much for your time, your attention, and your patience for staying in the room. I really appreciated the welcome, and I know I have probably overstayed my time, and I thank you so much.
Well, thank you. On behalf of ASTI, we're glad that you had the opportunity to come up and present both days with us, and just a token of our appreciation.
It's fish. No, I'm just kidding.
It's actually the ultimate cooking utensil.
Oh, cool.
And a cookbook if you're so inclined.
That would be useful. Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Actually, the clapping sounds louder when it's recorded.